Welcome to Dog Stars, episode 29, when we're looking back at last week's once-in-a-lifetime display of the Northern Lights. Let's go! Hello, welcome to Oxford. It's been a while. Hello on a rather lovely, sunny May evening. Summer has a fine way of coming in. And we are out with you for the first time in ages. Sorry it's been ages. I've been busy with book stuff and managed to injure my leg running. Max has been a bit nervous due to a unfortunate encounter with the park. Everyone's fine. There was barking. But he's sort of not been up for walking as much in recent weeks. But we're out tonight, just a few days after, hopefully lots of you, saw the celestial show of a lifetime, which we failed to tell you about. It was a brilliant display of the aurora at the Northern Lights last Friday. Visible from, well, pretty much everywhere, certainly in the UK. A colleague of mine who is in Mississippi, been an astronomer his whole life, has never seen the Northern Lights, saw it. There were Southern Lights, I know people in New Zealand, as far north as Melbourne, also saw the lights. So I thought, as we're out and it's sunny, and it'll get dark for ages this time of year, I should talk a bit about what we've seen and why it happened and what the chances are that it happened again. Come back. Let's go. Max actually had a better view than me. He was in the garden, keeping an eye on it. I was coming back from London, squinting out of a train window, trying to see things. No, that's a jogger. That's okay. Good boy. So, what are the Northern Lights and what happens? Well, they're the effect of the sun on our Earth's atmosphere. And if you read a lot of the press, the one-line report is that the sun, the solar wind, throws out particles, mostly protons and electrons, that travel out through the solar system. And when they hit our atmosphere, they excite the atoms in the atmosphere in the same way that, say, a streetlight would excite, an old-fashioned streetlight would excite the sodium that's in it. When you excite atoms, when they de-excite, they glow with particular colours. So you get green and purple and red, from mostly oxygen and nitrogen in the Earth's atmosphere. And that's not a bad description. It drives solar physicists up the wall because anything involving magnetic fields is always more complicated than you think. And actually what's happening is the particles are changing the characteristics of Earth's magnetic field and then bag-sites the particles. So it's not as simple as a smash into the atmosphere, an excited atom, and then some glowing. But this sort of happens a lot. There's normally on most nights what's called the auroral oval, which is the part of the atmosphere that's being excited. And it's normally around the poles. So this is a northern thing. So if you think of, if you've ever seen this on telly, you will have seen, I think there's a Joanna Lumley documentary, it wasn't there for the BBC, or we filmed it for Scott Knight, being in northern Norway surrounded by snow, watching flickering curtains of aurora. But when the sun's very active, when it's throwing loads of particles out, then that oval moved south. And that's what happened on Friday. It moved all the way south, and so we were underneath it. And we saw the lights overhead, even from here in the south of the UK. Good boy. Surprisingly quiet. I thought we'd hit dogs at this time. It's not too bad so far. Good boy. Why is the sun particularly active? Well, the sun has an 11-year cycle, which was first noticed by people who counted sunspots in the late 18th century. It was a brutal thing. Go on, this way, let's go. Good boy. Today we have Nibber, a street. There you go. Good boy. Come on, let's go. Good boy. Come on, keep going. Come on. Let's go. Good boy. Good boy. Yeah, no fighting, no barking. Good boy. So the sun has this 11-year cycle, we've seen more sunspots. And we're just coming up to the maximum of that cycle, maybe for the next year or so. And that's accompanied by more flares, which are events when the sun goes material space, particularly coronal mass ejections, which my colleague and friend Chris Scott, who should be listening, hey Chris, once told me it was something like a billion tons of matter moving at a million miles an hour. So these are really big effects. Wait. Cross. These are really big events that really affect the whole solar system. And there were five of them last week, and there's been another major event just today as well. So they're more common when the sun is active. The sun's particularly active. These things have more particles, more effect on the magnetic field, more dramatic northern lights. And so what did people see? Well, they saw these curtains of light. They were coloured, though for a lot of people, particularly in the south, particularly if you weren't dark adapted, if you didn't give your eyes 20 minutes to get used to the dark, or if you were staring at a phone screen trying to take a picture, and they will have appeared black and white. And that's because when you see faint light, your eyes aren't good at seeing colour. The cells in your eyes, come on this way, as I said before, this way, here you go. And the cells in your eyes that do colour aren't the ones that do faint light. And so if you see something faint, it's inevitably black and white. So that's why for a lot of people, when they took pictures, come on, let's go, this way. When they saw pictures that were coloured, and when they looked at their eyes, they were black and white. Yeah, come on. You want to go this way? Where do you want to go? All right, you can step around here, that's okay. Going backwards, but fine. So it's all these coloured curtains of light of them. And the thing about the lights that's different from every other celestial phenomena, I think, is that they appear to move. Well, actually, that's not quite the right word. They appear to change. They change really rapidly over time. They never quite look the same from moment to moment. But because what's happening is really they're changing in brightness, only in very spectacular displays, you get rapid actual movement. But you're seeing the change in brightness. It's a bit like a jump cut in a film. And so you always have the slightly eerie impression, right? Here you go. You have the slightly eerie impression that the change is happening just out the corner of your eye, that you haven't quite caught them changing. And this creates quite an eerie, strange impression. And certainly, if you don't know what you're seeing, and particularly if you're out on your own in a dark area, come on, this way, and the lights can be eerie. There are all sorts of legends and stories about them from different cultures in which they're quite a malevolent presence, where, you know, they're as likely to take a traveller away or drive them mad as they are to impress them from the experience. And I think this is linked to the fact people have imagined all sorts of things. There are sporadic reports throughout the 20th century even of noisy aurora, and people think they can hear things when they're seeing them. All right, mate, it's okay. All right, people think they can hear things or even smell things when they're seeing the aurora. And none of which makes much sense scientifically. Come on, we're going to go this way. That's it. Come on, with me. Let's go. Come on. Let's go. Good boy. Good boy. Let's go. Yeah. Better example of Max being biddable there. Come on. Let's go. Come on. Let's go. Liver is a high value treat. So you have this quite eerie, strange, beautiful presence. So, if you missed it on Friday, if you're stuck on a train like me, can you see the lights again? I know there are lots of people's bucket lists. Well, you can always travel to see them. If you go north, you're more likely to get a good display. Oops, here we go, this way. Good boy. With me, come on. Good boy. Here we go, come on. Let's go. Good boy. Here you go. Good boy, Max. Well done. Here we go. Good boy. Here you go. That was really good. That was a collie and a cockapoo on leaves on the other side of the street. But still, we got out of the way and we didn't bark at them. Good boy. Yes. Anyway, as I was saying, what are the odds of you seeing the lights again? Well, you can always improve your odds and you can travel to go and see them. You can go north. That always helps. But we're in this time where the sun is busy and active for the next year or so. And so you can always just hope to get lucky. If you want to keep an eye out, there's an Aurora Watch website from Lancaster University if you're in the UK, and a NASA version if you're in the US that will tell you what the odds are. But you really just gotta be lucky. It's always worth going out. If you think there's a solar storm, go out, get somewhere dark, and for once use your phone. Actually, take a long exposure photograph towards the north, the phone will pick up any signs of an aurora then you know what you're looking for. Then I'd recommend putting your phone away and enjoying it. But there's no doubt they reward consistency. I wanted to tell the story briefly of I used to do tours to go and see the aurora. I was the astronomer, and we went to Northern Norway, Tromsø, at a local guide, and on night one had the best display of aurora I will ever see. It was green and purple and red. There were coloured shadows on the ground. They were moving rapidly. There was above us at one point on this frozen lake, and above us there was just this auroral crown, this round feature chasing itself round and round and round above us. It was utterly magical, like, you know, Disney's best CGI. Good boy. Yes, we can cross. And it was a wonderful and amazing night. Lasted a few hours. We went back to the hotel. Everyone was very happy. I woke up the next morning to discover it was snowing. And it continued snowing for the rest of the day. The kind of snow that, you know, if you went outside, you wouldn't be able to see your hand in front of your face. And so the tour party elected to hang out in the bar and swap photos and tales of the night before. And our local guide was incensed because he was insistent that we had to respect the light, that if we didn't go and chase them, then we weren't being respectful. So despite the fact it was snowing, we got all these poor people who'd had a few drinks into a minibus, drove for 2.5 hours to the Finnish border, got out, stood on a lay-by on the side of a hill, which was still snowing, to look through a gap in the cloud to see a tiny, come on this way, good boy, to see a tiny, tiny green cloud on the horizon. But we'd respected the light, and we were then allowed to return to the hotel. So, guidelines, do respect the lights, do keep an eye out for aurorae, don't bark at anyone, and yeah, good luck. I hope you saw something on Friday, but if you didn't, you haven't lost your only hope. The sun will be active for the next year or so. Take care. We're going to head down. Talk to you all soon.
Thank you for listening. You can find us on Twitter at DogStarsPod. And drop us a line at dogstarspod@gmail.com. Do let us know if you've been on your own walks or spotted anything in the night sky. I'm Chris Lintott, he's Mr. Max, and this was Dog Stars. Thanks to Ellis Partman for production. We'll be back next week.